I think all of you have seen this abbreviation in the past. Maybe some of you have seen it on bracelets and stuff, but WWJD, and we all know that to be What Would Jesus Do? Well, I've got a little twist on that tonight that I'll get into right now. It's a movie that I watched, and it's actually on Netflix, and it's a great movie. It was a great movie, and I kept seeing it on there, and I kept wanting to watch it, and I kept thinking, oh, this is going to be too heavy. I'll wait and watch it some other night. But finally, I watched it late one night, and it was really a good movie for what it was. It was about a church that was dying. They'd been around 100 years, and the members were not acting individually like Christians. Some of them were accepting bribes, and some of them were stealing from other people in their jobs. Like, one was a real estate agent and was stealing, and one was being a corrupt politician. And one was a country singer that was about to sign a big contract, but not to sing country, not to sing Christian music. They wanted him to sing rock music. They thought he had a great voice. And there were lots of empty seats in the building. It had gone from being this prosperous church in the middle of town to now there was just a couple people that were still going there. And the preacher had completely lost his faith a few years prior to this. Where they pick up this movie, his wife and kid had passed away in a car wreck. And so he completely lost his faith and was just going through the motions and really didn't care whether the congregation stayed together or not. And the bank was, in this movie, the bank was really licking their chops, hoping that this church would fail, which was what it was about to do, because they were wanting to foreclose on it and put in a casino in this location right in town. So all in all, you can get the feel that this was a church that at one time had a lot going for it, but it was a sleepy little congregation. The preacher would get up to speak and there was just a few people in the crowd and they'd be yawning or doing other things, and there wasn't any energy, or there didn't feel to be much love there. And honestly, that church is not so different from many churches today. And what I'm going to talk about tonight, and especially this crowd who's normally here, this isn't specifically directed at any one of us, but it's generally speaking some things for us to consider and things for us to be on guard about. But the churches that I've seen today, when you go around and you go to a lot of different churches and just churches you hear about, is that people do not have time for spiritual things. And I put that in quotes because they fill their lives full of other things. A lot of times the members, they don't love each other. They take church for granted. It will always be there, is a thought they think. Or somebody else will take care of, and you can fill in the blank, whether it's teaching Bible classes or whether it's helping out with VBS or even cleaning up, having work days. Everyone else will do it. Or we had a visitor that came a couple weeks ago, and he was downtown and needed someone to pick him up. And things like that, that there's always a need out there, and there's always opportunities that we can take that some people do and some people don't. One of Craig's hardest jobs, I would say, on a cycle-by-cycle basis is getting people that will commit to teach. And it's a commitment, but it's something that is one of those things that people take for granted a lot of times. And a lot of people take the word for granted. Sometimes there's a lack of Bible studies that goes on in churches and individuals. I talk to friends that go other places, whether a denomination or whatever, and the Bible is not very much a part of what they do in their worship service or what they do on their off times at their home. Lack of prayer often infiltrates congregations and also just the world in general. A lack of hospitality. And I would tell you, most churches, they don't even know where each other lives or what each other does for a living, or even deeper than that, what struggles people are having. It's just one of those things that that when your church is not thriving and when you're just going through the motions, these are the type of things that happen. And being too busy. A lot of churches are too busy. We're all busy. There's a saying that if you want to get something done, you give it to somebody that's already busy because they know how to get other things done. You don't give it to the person that's never busy or has nothing to do, because they'll never get it done. So these are the things, and a lot of churches, a lot of individuals within churches, they take their marriages for granted too. That's why marriages, the success rate is under 50% for first marriages, and it drops to under 30% for second marriages, and the statistics keep dropping. It's a lack of commitment, and it's taking them for granted in a lot of cases. And taking the time that we have left for granted is another reason. I think there'd be a lot more urgency with individuals and churches if people realized how little time we have left. And we all have the same amount of time. We have the rest of our lives, but we haven't got much time left. I'm stunned. I had my birthday this week, and I won't say how old I am, but I can't believe that many years has passed already. I can't have that. There's no way I'm gonna. I'm already over halfway through my life, because when I calculate what the devil that would be, there's no way I'm living to that age. So those things come up on us, and if we're not careful, we take for granted how much time we have left, just like congregations take for granted the congregation themselves. But in the movie, there was a stranger that comes to town, and he was kind of scruffy looking, and he was an army vet, but he was kind of homeless. And through the course of the first half of the movie, he interacted with each of these members. That's how I knew what they did, because it was part of the plan of the movie. But every time he would come across one of these people, he would ask him the question, "What would Jesus do?" And it pricked their heart, because they realized, you know, they weren't living their lives the way that they ought to be living them. But I watched that movie, and the determination I came to, a better question for us, and I can't believe somebody hasn't already done this before, but what did Jesus do? Because we know what Jesus did. We have the Bible. We know exactly what he did. And what made this lesson that I had to struggle for me was that I came up with 40 things I could have put on my list of what to do. And I did. It's longer than I intended for it to be, but we won't go in depth with every point I've got. But it's things that I want you to think about, and thinks about what we can do, and the litmus test we can have in our lives on the way we should be living our time and energy. And keep this in mind, what did Jesus do? And that's the premise for the rest of my talk tonight. And I apologize if you can't read these. I blew them up as big as possible. But the first one is Jesus overcame temptation. Just like we can in our everyday lives, Jesus gave us the example of what that looks like. And I'm going to read from Matthew chapter 4, starting with verse 1. "Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. And the tempter came and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread.' But he answered, 'It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God.' Then the devil took him to the holy city and sent him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against the stone.' And Jesus again said to him, 'Again, it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test.'" So we can already see from this first example, we don't have to wonder what Jesus would have done. We know when we're tempted, when we're challenged by other people, what did Jesus do? He goes to the Word. It is written. And that's what we can do when we're confronted with similar situations. And that also implies that we know what is written. So there's a level of study that we have to continue to get better at and continue to understand and be able to have in our quill, as Gary always talks about, is your barn full, I think is how he words it. But are we putting hay up in the barn so that when these challenges come up, we're able to answer them? So that's the first point that I want to make tonight, is overcoming temptation. The next one is love and friendship. Christ showed us what that looks like. And I'm coming from John chapter 11, and this is a story of Lazarus and Martha and her sister. And I'm going to start with verse 1, chapter 11, verse 1. "Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, in the village of Mary, and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him saying, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So we see here that it wasn't a cursory, "I love the whole world" here. This is so specific. He loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And he showed us what that looks like. And not just love, but a friendship. And friendship's so important. I gave a sermon in Colorado once on friendship. And there was this man that was a deacon and actually had been an elder at one time. And he came up to me flabbergasted. He goes, "Scott, I never thought about that friendship could be important until I heard your lesson." And I said, "How could you go through your whole life and not have close friends to know how important that is?" And so, but Christ shows us the importance of friendship and the importance of love and what that looks like and or should look like in our lives. So it's another example. I want to move on so I can get through all this. Jesus wept. And John chapter 11, 32, it says, "Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, 'Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died.' When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, 'Where have you laid him?' And they said to him, 'Lord, come and see.'" And verse 35 says, "Jesus wept." One thing I meant to say at the beginning here is I've for every point I've got, you can probably tell me 40 verses I could have used as well. And that's what I hope you'll go home and look up and have as well. I couldn't capture everything. And some of these I used one verse for two or three points. But I get that I'm not capturing an exclusive with every point here. But what I want to show from this is that Jesus, a lot of times, when he was really troubled, and Paul, when he was writing letters to the churches, he agonized over them and their souls. And when Paul left, what the congregations, what was going to happen to them, who was going to come after him and teach to them, and those things he agonized over. And I would ask us, how many times have we wept over a fellow Christian, over somebody in need, over somebody that's lost their job? There's a million things that we can agonize over, and that's the relationship we should have with each other and with the church, that we agonize when things aren't going well. And I just think it's a good point to keep in mind as we continue to move forward here. In Christ served us, both, and I'm going to use two examples as a teacher and Lord here, but it says from John chapter 13, verse 12, it said, "When he had washed their feet and put his armor garments and resumed his place, he said to them, 'Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you also should do just as I have done.'" And a couple things I want to bring up here. Not only did he wash their feet, but it's the attitude Christ had. He would have been willing to do anything for us that promoted the word and promoted what God wanted us to do. And he was showing that there was nothing that he wasn't too good to do. And I think it's a great example for us. There should be nothing that we're too good to do to help out our congregation or each other or our family when it comes to this. But so Jesus, he gives us, what did Jesus do? This is what he did. This is how he served us and how he served the apostles. Can you think of a less glamorous job than as dusty and dirty as it was that he was willing to wash their feet? And that's purposely why he did that, to show them what was going to be expected of them and what service looked like as far as Christ was concerned. So moving on, he was also a teacher, and Marion, I could use the last verse for this as well. But the story of the woman at the well. And verse 10 says, "Jesus answered her, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, "Give me a drink," you would have asked him and he would have given you living water.'" One thing, I've heard a sermon on these verses before that I really liked, and it talked about how it was probably late in the day and it was hot and tired, and he was tired and thirsty, and maybe for most people the last thing you want to do is get in a real deep biblical discussion with somebody. Most of us have probably been in that situation before. But Christ was great at every opportunity. He knew what to say, and he knew, and teaching was at the foremost of his mind, just like this example here. We have to guard against ever being so tired or so rushed or so busy that we can't take the time to look at the opportunities that we have available to us. And I think that's a great opportunity, a great point that's brought out in this verse here, that he was a teacher for us and a teacher on what we should look like when we're out living our lives. He recruited others. And I don't know if you've thought about this or not, but there's denominations out there that really outwork us when it comes to this. But Christ gave us the example of what recruiting looks like. And I'm going to read from Matthew chapter 4, starting with verse 18. It said, while walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets. He called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. I mean, we're not collecting apostles together here, but we have the opportunity to invite people to church, to try to have Bible studies, to talk to people about the Word. And Christ showed us what recruiting looks like. People can be anywhere. You can't think that somebody is going to either accept your invitation or not accept it. You just have to throw it out there and see what happens. And I think when we look to recruiting and looking at our numbers growing, we can look to Christ for what recruitment looks like. And I think this is a great example where he was at and what he did to help out with that. Christ also stood up for the Word. And the voice I brought up, the scripture that I want to bring up tonight is the one about when he was in the temple and he destroyed it because he was not happy with what they were doing to it. And I'm going to start with John chapter 2, verse 13. It said, the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found those who were selling oxen and sheep and pigeons and the money changers sitting there. And making a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And he told them, and he told those who sold the pigeons, take these things away. Do not make my Father's house a house of trade. One thing I want to take from this is that we have to take God's Word serious. And it's not always fun or easy, and we can do it with tact. But we have to challenge people that either misquote the Bible or apply it in an incorrect manner. We can't just overlook it, because Christ wouldn't have overlooked it. And he didn't overlook it. And this is the example that he gives unto us for this. I keep wanting to ask if there's any questions, but I'm not in a presentation. So it's funny. I think about that. But healed and fed many. These are also things that Christ showed us. Matthew chapter 15, verse 29, it says, Jesus went on from there and walked beside the Sea of Galilee. He went up on the mountain and sat down there. And great crowds came to him, bringing with them the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others. And they put them at his feet, and he healed them. So that the crowd wondered when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled healthy, and the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel. What I wanted us to take from this, verse 37 down below, Matthew, and they all ate and were satisfied, and they took up 7 baskets full of broken pieces left over. We don't have to feed 5,000 people or comfort 5,000 people, but the verse says we can offer a cup of cold water to somebody to encourage them, to help them. And how many of us have done that? have helped somebody that you see in need. I mean, we don't have to help everybody, but if we're busy helping one or two people, as many people as we have in this room, that's a lot of people that will be impacted. And they will go off and remember what we've done for them. So I think this is another great example. Christ shows us what healing looks like and what comforting looks like. So you can use this or many other verses that we could use for that. And showing great judgment. I thought about this, and you might take this for granted, but using great judgment is sometimes lost in our society, and I've even seen Christians not use the best of judgment at times. But I want to focus on John chapter 8, verse 11. And this is the story about the woman in... I'll start up higher. It says, the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery and placed her in the midst. And they said to him, teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. And go to verse 11. She said, no one, Lord. She said, verse 10. Jesus stood up and said to her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? And she said, no one, Lord. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Go from now on and sin no more. He used great judgment in this example because he could have done many things, like he could have yelled at her and he could have convicted her right up front. But he knew what the Pharisees were doing there, and they weren't worried about that woman. They were trying to trip him up. And so a lot of times Jesus used great judgment and he let people convict themselves just by their own answers. And I think it's a great opportunity for us is to always think about using great judgment or sound judgment in how we apply the word or how we interact with other people or even rebuke people when we need to do that. So this is another good example of a lesson that Christ taught us. And he was encouraging as well. From Luke chapter 12, verse 22, and he said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will put on. And it goes all the way talking about the lilies of the field and the birds of the air. Christ was encouraging when he needed to be. He wasn't always just rebuking. And encouragement goes a long way. And Christ shows us the example of what encouragement can look like and should look like for us. And mocking, spitting, flogging, and being killed. All these things Christ did for us. And he shows us from Matthew 10, verse 34. And he said, and they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days he will rise. How many of us, for our Christian beliefs, have been mocked or spit on or flogged or even killed for that matter? None of us have been killed yet, but I'll go ahead and answer that one. But how many of us are even willing to let those things happen to us for our Christianity, for our spiritual beliefs? And Jesus tells us that he was willing and did do these things for us, and that's what his expectations are for us, that we are willing to do these things, and it can happen. And does happen in cases. Pitfalls. I want to just list quickly the pitfalls for us when it comes to us serving God or when it comes to us trying to be more Christ-like. And I listed some of these, and all of these I've done them or through I've seen other Christians, other places I've been, lots of places. These are all things that I've seen happen. So this isn't other people doing this stuff, but road rage, it happens. Our roads, people drive angry. And if you're not careful, we fit right in with them and we drive angry too. And we do road rage things. It can happen to us. These are pitfalls for us. Cheating on our taxes. It's easy to do. Nobody sees what you're doing. It can happen. And it has happened. I've seen it happen to people and they get in trouble for it. Having inappropriate acquaintances. That shows up in many ways, whether it's just a drain on your time or it's the influence they have on you or it can turn into problems with your marriage. That's another pitfall for us is having inappropriate acquaintances. Being unfaithful to your spouse. I've seen elders that got caught in adultery, and deacons and preachers and all kinds of people that you would never expect. It can happen, and it does happen. And it can be a pitfall for us if we're not careful. Stealing from others. It's happened to me personally. It's happened to Sandy, other people. Christians can and do steal from other Christians. I mean, that's a pitfall. Murder. I've got a friend that's a deacon. His dad's an elder. His brother killed somebody. And it happens. DUIs. All these things can and do happen in the church. And they can happen to us if we're not careful. Having the wrong priorities is another big one. And that leads to a lot of these other things if we're not careful. Being rude to others. That one, you might think, that happens a lot when you're tired or you're short or you got other things on your mind. We need to always remember how what we say and how we interact with people, how it can be perceived by others. And that's another pitfall for us as we try to work within our congregation or work with each other. The cumulative effect of our actions can be the downfall of our congregation if we're not careful, or congregations in general. In conclusion tonight, I want to talk about just a couple things. We can fill our lives making a positive difference. That can look like a lot of things. It can look like helping out, doing one extra thing at church, having one family over to encourage them, having a prayer list that you look at every night. I mean, I can have an exhaustive list of the things we can do to fill our lives to make a positive difference. And I'm hoping maybe this talk is challenging you to do that as well. We can fill our lives being a godly example. It just happened to come up yesterday. I went to Skyline Drive, which you normally have to pay to get in. And a lady that I was with used her mom's card and got in for free. And I got to thinking to myself, that's not being a very godly example there. And I kind of shared that with her that, cause she knows my faith and everything. And I said, that's not something I would brag about, but it's so easy to lose your godly influence, on little things that you don't think matter that much. We can love as God loved us. And we do that by the fruit of the Spirit that we've talked about in our Holy Spirit class. We can also do it by what Christ taught us. Through the scriptures. We can remember Christ in all of our actions. Sometimes that's easier said than done, but we can do that. An example, a Catholic member came in, and I usually sit in the back, and a Catholic member came in and said that he'd heard about what had happened to Gary, and he just wanted us to know that their church was praying for us. I mean, that's something that was really nice it's a nice thing to do. And we need to fill our lives full of nice things to do that are also spiritually based that can help out. That just struck me as something that, wow, they didn't have to do that. And that was just a nice thing they did. And last week, Riley in his prayer, he said, help us to be more like Jesus every day. And I hope that my talk here tonight will help us to do that as well, to be more cognizant of what Christ taught us to be, because he did teach us how we should be more Christ-like. It shouldn't be a what would Jesus do and us interpret in our own minds, oh, he would buy yellow tennis shoes and run around the block every day. And now we know what Jesus would do because he told us what he would do. He showed us more than that. Or we can waste our lives missing out on our opportunities. And a friend of mine was talking about, oh, that guy, he's ridden motorcycles 40 years. He must be great. And I said, no, he might just be really bad and has practiced that 40 years. I said, learn to do the right things and focus on those. It's not necessarily just because you've sat in a pew 40 years that you're a great Christian. You have to work at it. You have to pray about it. We have to study on it every day. So I want to conclude with two verses. 1 Peter chapter 4, starting with verse 8. It says, above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love conquers a multitude of sins. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. Whoever speaks as one who speaks oracles of God, whoever serves as one who serves by the strength that God supplies, in order that in everything God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. To him belong glory and dominion forever and ever. And the final verse I want to read is 1 John chapter 3, verse 18. Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth. So I haven't talked at all about those that might be here that aren't Christians, but you have the opportunity tonight, if you are Christians and you need us to pray for you or you need your help in any way, or if you haven't been baptized for the remission of your sins, you have the opportunity tonight to please come forward while we stand and sing.